The American Communist Party reduced its high command to skeleton size today in a maneuver to outsmart government prosecutors. The party's governing body was chopped down to 3 members. They were left to hold the legal fort against the government's mandate that all party officers register as Soviet agents or face jail terms and heavy fines. The deadline for registering expires at midnight. As the 0 hour approaches, there are signs that other top officials are going underground to escape arrest. Telephone calls to the party's national headquarters in New York and to regional offices in various cities brought reports that the commissars were out of town, in conference, or otherwise unavailable. The reshuffling of the high command confirmed that the party was preparing new legal strategy. A Department of Justice official told us at that time that the department was aware of plans to dissolve the party leadership. He said the department is ready to take whatever legal steps are necessary to head off this strategy. More than a dozen members of the governing board were dropped in the reorganization. The 3 who are left to run the party are the national chairman, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, the national secretary, Ben Davis, and the general secretary, Gus Hall. Mrs. Flynn recently returned from Moscow, saying she had rejected suggestions that she remain in Russia to avoid prosecution. She said since she is 70 years old, a jail term under the registration law would amount to a life sentence. The law provides a penalty of 5 years in jail for every day of noncompliance. Attorney General Robert Kennedy today repeated his promise that the law will be enforced. This is Ned Brooks.
Latin American diplomats here in Washington confirm that the moderate opposition forces and the regime of President Joaquin Balaguer have virtually agreed on the principal conditions under which a new provisional governing council will take over in the Dominican Republic. One diplomat said that the representatives of the two sides are still working on details of arrangement, but that unless the extremists should get out of control, there is every evidence that the crisis will be settled. These sources point out that the situation has not been as explosive in the past 3 days as it has been made to appear. There's been no serious violence, no destruction of property. The mobs have not actually been out of control, and the military authorities have purposely let them work off steam. Also, it has been a part of the moderate opposition strategy to keep up a certain amount of pressure until final plans for a new setup have been agreed upon. Today's demonstrations in the capital city of Santo Domingo itself have been nothing like as large as they were yesterday. The largest crowd to appear today before Government House was estimated at 1,000, and the vast majority of these were students and teenagers. There is every evidence that these youngsters have been maneuvered into action by fanatical leftists, because all the moderate elements and leaders have counseled their followers against violence. The most alarming aspects of the whole affair are the continual broadcasts by the Cuban radio, urging the people to rise up and throw the present government out, and to kill the leaders if necessary in order to take power. The Cuban broadcasters are shouting that the imperialist Yankees are supporting the remnants of the Trujillo criminals. Unimpeachable sources here agree that only the quick deployment of United States naval and air forces around the island prevented Castro invasion forces from attempting to land on Dominican shores. No doubt this accounts for the angry charges of Yankee intervention made by the Cubans and Russian delegates in the United Nations. This is Edward Tomlinson.
Valerian Zorin, Soviet ambassador to the United Nations, walked out of a dinner last night because he considered the speech of Vice President Johnson offensive to the Soviet Union. The burden of the Vice President's remarks was that the free world is winning the Cold War with the communists and that any Soviet attack on Europe would be a most hazardous enterprise. Zorin complained that the vice president began accusing the USSR of some expansionist actions and aspirations which he couldn't listen to from any quarter, hence his protest walkout. This is a perfect example of the communist double standard, for no one is more vociferous in claiming the inevitability of victory than Zorin's own boss, Khrushchev. It's Khrushchev who spices every diplomatic cocktail party in Moscow with boasts that communism's defeat of the free world is inevitable. It's Khrushchev who has promised to bury us. Khrushchev who predicts that our grandchildren will live under communism. It's Khrushchev who has just tried to intimidate the whole world by breaking his pledged word and exploding 50 atomic weapons tests. Khrushchev who pounded his desk at the UN with his shoe, the better to show his contempt for good manners and orderly behavior. Yet Khrushchev's ambassador Zorin now has the audacity to attempt to give the vice president a lesson in good manners. Zorin may be particularly on edge at the present time because his own chief Khrushchev has himself made the most damning criticism of the Soviet's past leaders by exposing them as despots who kept themselves in power by murder and torture. And after all, Khrushchev should know, for he was one of them. As Vice President Johnson commented on the Zorin walkout, the communists seemed to want someone to build an iron curtain around the truth in order to hide it from their own people. But I see no reason to protect the communists from the truth. The free world is winning. This is David Will.
Tonight's special report by Ned Brooks that the Communist Party of the United States now has gone underground in open defiance of our laws carries new threats to our national security. Any subversive organization which operates in the dark instead of in the open is difficult for our law enforcement agencies to control. In a situation like the one which now confronts us, we can be thankful for the existence of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Under the direction of J. Edgar Hoover, that excellent law enforcement agency has become expert in keeping track of subversives and their operation. The communist leaders who now have disappeared to avoid registering as required by law may think they are concealing themselves from the FBI, but it is almost a certainty that the FBI knows their whereabouts and can put its hands on them at any time it wishes to do so. It also is almost a certainty the FBI agents will be able to supply the Department of Justice with a running account of the activities of the American Reds who now have gone into hiding. Over the years, the communists and their left-wing supporters have tried their best to discredit and weaken the FBI through propaganda attacks both on the agency and on its director, Mr. Hoover. We now have a situation which proves why they wanted the agency out of the way.